This podcast is brought to you by the Specialty Produce Network.
Bebo Tribe was founded with a mission of developing tasty snacks for people on the go, like you and me, by using millennial ingredients, superfoods, which have nourished civilizations and tribes throughout the centuries. Bebo Tribe set on a journey to craft unique and healthy snacks to sustain our energy during the day using organic ingredients and delicious global flavors. The result led us to something truly amazing, Bean Bebo. For more information, go to our website, bebotribe.com.
Hello, and welcome to my podcast, brought to you by me, Vegan Danielle. Tune in as we discuss vegan-related topics ranging from cooking to fitness and nonprofits to small businesses. So sit back, grab a glass of almond milk, and listen up, because here comes another episode. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another podcast. I am your host, Vegan Danielle, and with me today is Matt Lawrence of Farm Animal Refuge in California. Farm Animal Refuge is an agricultural animal rescue that focuses on abused, neglected, and unwanted farm animals. After working at a restaurant together, Jordan and Matt became friends and have been roommates for the past 10 years. They recognized that San Diego needed an animal rescue, and the process began. Jordan and Matt started to look for properties, and the one they settled on in 2016 is now known as Farm Animal Refuge. Welcome!
Hi, I'm really excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so happy you're here, too. I know we have exchanged messages, or at least Jordan and I, and we've gone back and forth, and I've seen you places, and so I'm happy to finally talk to you on the podcast. So let's just start from the beginning. When you guys first met, you and Jordan, were you guys vegan yet?
No, Jordan has been vegetarian since high school, or maybe even before.
Okay.
Actually, when we first met, I was eating everything. I was eating burgers and wings and all of that kind of stuff. I really liked classic American style.
I was going to say, American.
Yeah, my diet was very, very meat heavy, cheese heavy. Classic American. Lived together for about a year. You know, she kept doing some vegetarian wisdom on me. And I always knew it was a healthier way. So one day I just decided I was going to go vegan for a little bit. And then it just never ended.
We never went back.
Yeah, exactly.
So I want to kind of go back to something you just said. So what was it that finally made it stick for you?
For me, originally, it was more about the environment. Mm-hmm. When I started learning a little bit about the effects animal agriculture has on our environment, and this was 10 years ago, a lot of that facts weren't even out yet. So yeah. I didn't even know the extent to it, but I just knew it was a little bit better. I also knew it was healthier for you, you know. I still enjoyed all that food, but I wanted to go vegan because I knew it would cleanse my body. I figured it was an easy way instead of doing something crazy to just, I'll just go vegan for a while, cleanse my body, and then get right back to eating whatever I wanted to. Because I went vegan for a couple weeks.
So right.
So that's kind of why I started. And then the animal aspect, it comes at the end, which it always does if that's not where you started originally.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of a hard area to ignore.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I honestly, mine started out with the animals, but I've learned so much through the health side. But it's so funny that you mentioned, the cleanse thing, because I've had quite a few people that aren't vegan tell me, I'd be willing to go vegan for a couple weeks, but then, for a cleanse, right?
Yeah.
And then those same people, in a totally another sentence, maybe a month later or before, they'll say something like, oh, yeah, you know, is it really that healthy to be vegan?
Oh, yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, I'm just, what kind of excuse could I make up at this point to go back to it?
I'm like, wait, we were literally just talking about cleansing your body. Why would you even go back to other food?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, so there's tons of ways to help animals. I think for me, the biggest thing is the podcast and making food, recipes and
absolutely.
Stuff like that. But holy crap, a rescue. How did that happen?
Yeah, so I'm sure a lot of people in the vegan community have heard of Gentle Barn or Farm Sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
So Jordan actually is the one who discovered those. And she made trips up there, brought some of her friends, brought some of her family. I went up a couple times. But from San Diego, it's about 2.5 hour drive, 3 hour drive each way. So it is a pretty big commitment to go up there. We're finding a lot of our vegan and vegetarian friends would go, but it's really hard to get people, pre-vegans we call them, to get up there.
Uh-huh.
And so we were like, man, San Diego really needs this. We need something a little bit closer so people can just come out for the day or for half the day. It's not so much of a commitment. You can get everybody out there, all walks of life in San Diego. So we were looking around. We're like, it's got to be something closer. And we just couldn't find it. Later, we did find there is a couple more around the San Diego area. But we knew that San Diego needed something like this. So nobody else was doing it. And we decided that we were probably the ones who needed to.
I like that you're talking about being open to not just vegans, you know, people who are pre-vegans. Because to me, those are the most important people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Our rescue, if you're vegan, you come out there, it reaffirms everything. It's amazing to just spend time with those animals. But they have a way of changing somebody's opinion just by being themselves. And the whole goal of a rescue is a passive form of activism.
Yep.
People come out, they meet the animals, they learn about their personalities and their family units, and we get rid of some of those myths that the agricultural industry has set up for us. And people can change pretty quickly, and we hit a certain amount of market of people that other people won't buy their words, and not even we do. The animals actually affect them.
Right. Yeah. I know. I think that's amazing because most people, if you put a piglet in their hand or, you know, a calf, they get to pet a calf or something, most of them are not going to have an instant thought of, I'm going to eat that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Earthling at I Love You says, you know, you give a baby a bunny or a strawberry, he's going to eat the strawberry and they're going to play with the rabbit.
Like,
it's natural human instinct. If you ask anybody if they're against animal abuse, 100% of people are going to say, yes, I am against it.
Right.
So our job is just to teach them the facts and show the animal abuse happening in the animal agricultural industry and let them make up their own decisions after that.
So these animals are mostly or all rescued from animal agriculture?
All from different aspects of animal agriculture.
Okay.
We do have some pot bellies that were more pets.
I love them.
But surprisingly, those do end up on people's plates quite often.
People
take them on as the myth of the micro pig or the mini pig. They have them for a couple years. They end up getting way larger than they ever told you they're going to be. They start destroying their house because they have their pigs. They need an outlet. They're not supposed to be in apartments. So people give them away on Craigslist. And there are people that will go on and pretend that they're going to adopt your animal. And this doesn't even happen only with pigs. There's other animals that it happens to. And they will pretend that they're going to bring it in, and that actually ends up in the freezer within days.
Oh, my God.
And so we do have that, but the rest of our animals are strictly pretty much rescued from the agricultural industry.
So how does that process go about? Are animal agriculture places contacting you? Are you contacting them? Like, how does the whole rescue happen?
So in the beginning, we were a little bit unsure about how this was all going to happen. We didn't know how we were going to get our animals. We're like, you know, do we have to go out and seek them, which is not something we wanted to do.
Right.
We don't want to put any money back in the system, so we don't buy any animals.
Yeah.
There have been certain instances where we've had to exchange a little bit, but we don't normally go out and shop for anything.
Right.
And once our name got out there, our phones just started blowing up.
I bet.
We're at this point, we're probably 2 to 3 calls a week for animals. And unfortunately, we have to say no to most of them, but we do network and place them other places.
Okay.
So certain scenarios that we've gone through are owner relinquishes when somebody have had a pet. Our recent rescue Dream, he's a male sheep.
Somebody, I saw him.
Yeah, he's amazing. Somebody actually found him on OfferUp, thought he was going to be a great house pet. He's going to be very cute. Couple months later, they realized that's not going to happen. So they called us. So actually, they contacted Farm Sanctuary. Farm Sanctuary contacted us.
Oh, very cool.
Because he was already a pet. He had already been established at this place, lived with dogs. That he needed a little bit more of an intimate home, such as what we have for them. But they've all come from different things. The farmers don't normally call us. We've had a couple goats from a small backyard farmer that we've gotten.
Okay.
But other than that, it's normally people, FFA and 4-H. We have had quite a few animals come from that program as well.
Okay. So you're no shortage of animals.
No shortage of animals. Unfortunately, we're basically been at capacity since we've opened.
Oh, my gosh.
I just mean, like, as we're growing, we have to be very responsible about how many we take.
Of course.
So we're never planning on taking another animal, but the ones that we've gotten have all pretty much just been emergencies that we've had to step up and take immediately. Otherwise, their fate would have been a little bit different. And then this year, we've had a couple spots for some goats and some sheep. So we did get a couple from the 4-H program. And then after that ended, we had a spot open for a Dream, which was really cool.
Wow, that's so cool. So what is the standard protocol after an animal is received? Like, medical care? Like, do they need, what if they need medical care? How does the whole thing work?
Almost all the ones that we've taken need medical care. Even the ones that are perceived healthy from the 4-H or FFA program always come with parasites.
I was going to say worms or something.
They always come with worms and parasites. Yeah. A lot of the things that they don't actually test for because it's not relevant to what's going to happen to them after the fairs. And so there is always medical that is involved with the animals. We bring them in. They're on quarantine from anywhere from 2 weeks to 6 weeks, depending on their level of sickness. We can't introduce anything into the herd. Otherwise, it's harder to get rid of.
Right.
As well as the stress of travel, the stress of the fairs actually induces sickness because their immune system is so low. I mean, they can get, it's called travel pneumonia.
Okay.
So we have to do that. We have to do fecals. They normally come back positive for something. Then we have to treat. We have to retest for fecals. But there have also been other cases, like Willie, one of our potbellies, needed like extensive vet care when we first got him. He was attacked by either a dog or a coyote.
Oh, that's right. He's the one you guys found in the field?
Yeah. He was kind of our foster fail pig that we got.
You ended up keeping.
He was a surprise. So all of them do need medical care. It depends on what kind of level of medical care that they need, but all of them involve something. So we receive them. We put them in quarantine, give them as much space as they need at first to be comfortable with us. We never force ourselves to have the relationship with them.
Yeah.
Some of them are immediately like, please stay in here with me. I love you. And other ones are like,
please,
hey, I'm cool. Can I just chill for a while? And we're like, here's your food. Here's your water. Throw you some treats later.
Aww.
You know, get some rest. But all of them are medical care, quarantine, and then eventually they're all introduced to the main herds.
When you're mentioning these things that they go through, all I'm thinking is more dollar signs. You know, like, I'm sure this can get extremely expensive.
Absolutely, yeah. It is a very expensive project or endeavor that we have taken on, but it's very, very important.
Yeah, no, I agree. And well, you know, before we leave, I want to mention at the end of the podcast that we'll have some resources if people want to help you guys out. So that.
Oh, awesome. Yeah,
for sure. We'll talk about that. So you had just mentioned what happens at the fairs, in quotes. what do you mean for those that don't know?
So a lot of people don't understand that fairs like the San Diego Fair, the 4-H program, they have fairs after. I went to El Capitan High School in East San Diego, and we actually had our fair at the Rodeo Grounds, which was connected.
Oh.
We didn't go to the San Diego Fair. But a lot of people don't realize those animals are there because it's actually a market to sell them. At the end of the fair, at the last week of the fair, they start being shown. They win awards.
Yeah.
Certain animals for their body structures will win awards. So that last Saturday of the fair, right before 4th of July, they all go up for auction. They're all sold, and they're all shipped off July 5th for slaughter. And a lot of people don't realize that, which is really, really sad. It's not a petting zoo. They're not family-friendly pets. They are all animals that are going to get slaughtered after the fair.
So I had someone on the podcast not too long ago. I think you may know who she is, but she was telling me this. She does a lot of animal activism at Del Mar and SeaWorld and stuff.
Ellen?
Yes.
Yeah, Ellen.
She's amazing.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
When she told me that, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea. I mean, I feel like even where I'm at right now, that I try to be up to date and super knowledgeable on what goes on in veganism or against veganism. And when I heard that, I was like, wait a minute. So these little kids that are 4-H whatever that are coming in to show their animal, they don't get to go home with their animal. Like, what?
Yeah, most of them don't even actually have them at home. They're actually kept at the schools or other facilities because these kids are not farm families. A lot of these kids live in apartments. Their families are not capable of actually keeping them, so they are end up forced into a position where they have to sell because they can't take them, or they're actually given loans at the beginning of the year to purchase these animals that their family has to repay at the end. So they kind of get in a bind where if their family cannot financially pay back the loan, there's no available option except for auction for these kids. So it's really sad.
So
we're really excited this year that we were able to get a couple out of the program, and those kids did not have to send their baby that they've raised all year long. They've named, they've halter trained, they've done everything, and we were able to save a couple this year, so we feel very special.
I know, that's amazing. Do you feel that the kids know what happens to the animals?
A lot of them do. To us, the program is more of a desensitizing kind of program. nobody really wants to go in a field where they have to murder something right. every day. Nobody right. wants to go in a field where they have to rip families apart every day. So yeah. if we indoctrinate the kids a little bit younger,
yeah.
then it's a little bit easier to funnel them in. You know, there's no future Doctors of America program at right. schools. There's no right. future policeman because people want to do those things. Nobody wants to do... of any kind of agricultural work, unless they're desensitized in the beginning, you know, they
grew up in that environment.
Yeah, they're encouraged to name their animals, and then they're encouraged to sell them at the end to kind of show the full wow. circle. I have also heard some pretty much lies that they tell the kids yeah. to convince them otherwise that this is a good idea and this is a natural part of the world.
That's insane. Yeah. I never even really thought about it on that level. I try not to sound like I'm too much of a conspiracy theorist, but yeah. the thing is, like, so many things that we think are true are.
Absolutely.
And even worse.
Yeah, and I personally believe that the program was necessary at a certain time in
right.
our history.
Right.
But at this point, we all have to evolve into what's going on, so they need to increase their agricultural programs. Their vegetable agricultural programs and organics, as well as instead of focusing just on the animals.
Yeah, I honestly, with you saying that, it brings me right back to this argument that I get in sometimes with people that tell me, like, well, our ancestors ate meat. And it's like, okay, first of all, when they did, and they're using, and we're talking about like long time yeah. ago ancestors, they're using spears and rocks and things that are going to make it really difficult to catch an animal.
Yeah.
So the chances of catching an animal were very slim.
Yeah.
And when they did, yeah, it was a celebration. They got to eat. Now, we're also talking about a time where, like, everybody's either a hunter or a gatherer. You know,
yeah.
it's like mm-hmm. we are when there are not seeds to eat or berries or whatever, we are hunting. And that is like a big thing. Now, there is no comparison between that way of life and our crazy factory farming that we have. And so that for
absolutely.
Me, I'm just like,
oh, absolutely. People always say, you know, consuming animals is a personal choice. And it's not a personal choice when it's unnecessary. And
when
it's
there's
still
a victim.
Effective. Absolutely. And if, you know, if you're on a desert island and you have to make that whatever decision, like, that's so irrelevant to what
it's
you
so
actually
stupid.
Were going through every single day here. You can walk into a grocery store. The soy milk is right next to the regular
oh my God.
Cow milk.
It's, I know. Yeah. And on top of that, like, what somebody's, of course, told me that or asked me that a million times. And I'm like, wait a minute. So if I'm stranded on an island and there's an animal, that animal obviously has a food source.
Yeah.
So
oh,
what's
yeah.
that food source?
Absolutely.
Oh, probably something mm-hmm. I can eat, right?
Yeah, maybe I'll use his manure to help cultivate some vegetables to feed both of us.
Right.
Because if you kill that animal, you're done
you're,
after.
I was going to say, then you're going to die
anyway.
You're
on bide time, you know. You don't have a refrigerator, I'm guessing. So you don't really have very much time.
Oh, my God. Yes. I love that we've both experienced.
Oh, yeah. Everyone, you know, when they just, people need that argument, they go to
they
the
do.
Extreme. And sometimes it's almost better just to say, hey, look, you know, like, that argument is so irrelevant to anything. Like, I don't even have an answer for you
right.
because it's something that's never going to happen. There's no reason to sit here and discuss it. And that's not an excuse to keep consuming animals.
Right.
So sometimes I do just be like, you know, like, if this is the argument you want to make,
if that's
like,
all you got.
Yeah, we're really not going to be going anywhere because you're just bringing up scenarios that are never going to happen. Like, let's talk about facts and what we live in our everyday lives and what choices
right.
we can make.
And I'm just realizing a little bit more and more, I mean, we obviously know it's a sensitive topic, but how invested people get in trying to prove, like, you know, that their ideals are okay or correct or whatever. And it's like, I get it. Nobody wants to be questioned on their values. Nobody wants to be, like, questioned on what's right, what's wrong there, especially if it was a family history. Like,
yeah.
oh, every Thanksgiving we make a turkey because mm-hmm. grandma's did that. And we're going to carry that on. Okay, I get that. But with time, we also evolve.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a way of giving homage to our ancestors
yeah.
by adopting the new available things that we have because they came to this country, because they migrated, because
right.
they've been through the things. Like, we should adopt better ways of doing things, not just focus
stay
on
the same.
Yeah, stay the same. That's why they did all the things that they did in the past. So we can take care of the opportunities. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Take these opportunities that we have nowadays that they didn't. So that you can keep
that's
all the
such
spices,
a good point.
Keep all the
yeah.
sauces, do, you know, do everything that you do traditionally, but you just
not
take out the animal products,
yeah.
you know? Absolutely.
Oh, that's such a good point. Like, would if our ancestors were looking back at us right now,
yeah.
looking down on us, and they were thinking, like, They're still doing that? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, like your grandma's like, you're putting that kind of meat in my thing? Like, that's not even what I, you know?
Right.
Like, that's not, like, it's almost disrespecting putting the quality of stuff that we're putting in it now. You can't use that as a defense anymore.
It's so good. Okay, so what's the hardest part about running a rescue?
Honestly, saying no to all the animals that we get calls from, it's every story is really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I will say I don't think any of the ones that we have gotten calls have ended up being slaughtered, which is really exciting.
That's good.
Because we have been able to place. But having to say no to all those animals, you get the pictures, you get the stories. But we can only grow as we responsibly can.
Of course.
Because the animals are always going to come first. So I think saying no to that, the animals, is definitely the hardest part.
That's got to be really hard. We got to get more people doing rescues. And
Absolutely.
We have land here in San Diego. We kind of discussed a little bit earlier, you don't have much room to take in any more animals right now, but just emergency cases sort of, that's the only time that you're...
Yeah, emergency cases. We've always said we're only going to grow as much as as support can grow. And only being 2 years in, I can't even believe how large we are because the support has been so overwhelming for us. It's been amazing.
That's good.
Yeah. And so we are pretty much capped. Our next project we're doing is expanding the cow area. We're actually starting to utilize all 10 acres that we purchased 2 years ago, which is really exciting. And then after that, we'll have a larger goat and sheep area, and we'll be able to reassess what we're able to do. But right now, we are just kind of working on some projects and giving the animals we have a better quality of life.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I think that's important for us. You don't want to get overcrowded, and then they all kind of...
Yeah, some go by the wayside. You know, we want to make sure that all of our animals are as socialized as possible, as socialized, get as much attention as they want. It's easy to say yes to all of them, but we have to.
But how much, you know, it's like the woman who takes in 14 cats in a 2-bedroom apartment. Like, yeah, you rescued them, but what's their quality of life?
Absolutely, yeah, you have to give them a quality of life. And these are agriculture animals. They're not house pets. You know, a lot of them do sleep in our house, but they spend their days outside with plenty of area to do their natural activities.
So your house is actually on the property?
Our house, yes. We both live on the property. Part of the way we're actually able to do this is me and Jordan's cost of living absorbs most of the farm's bills because our rent pays the mortgage. We pay, you know, all the water, SDG&E, and that's just our cost of living, a little bit more because it's the farm. But that the farm doesn't have to pay for any of that. So that's how we're able to keep the farm bills very low because we're taking on all of those kind of bills just by living there and doing our normal cost of living.
I'd want to live there anyway.
It is awesome. It is amazing. Yeah, I grew up in East County. I always thought I was going to move closer to the beach, and I ended up just moving way further East County. Yeah.
So what are some of your short-term and long-term goals, both for you as an individual as well as for the farm?
It's hard to say in the future because, as I said, we just have to grow as our support. We're not planning on being huge. Our goal is never to be so big and have multiple locations. If that's what the cards play out and that's what, you know, the world needs, then we'll do it. But our goal is to take it as slow as we need to, give everybody, all the animals, the opportunity to have their life and have the best care possible. Our short-term goals right now is we are doing our first big online fundraiser for our new cow area.
Yay!
So we need to do a new They have their barn that they're in now, but we're going to move the goats and the sheep in there so we can get a larger herd, as well as we're going to get them a new shade structure. We got to do some fencing work, do some corral panels. It is a lot of work.
And supplies.
We're ready to do it. So we are holding our first GoFundMe. We've been doing it for 2 years, and we haven't really done an online push, so this is our first one. So we're really hoping that we can get the support to get this project done. We know we will because everybody has been so amazing up to this point.
Yeah, well, we'll list that link in the description of the podcast as well, so people can go check that out. And I mean, I love the way GoFundMe does it too, because you can kind of see like the goal and how much people are contributing.
Yeah, if you go on there, we've broken down every project so everybody knows exactly where the money's going. Okay. We've already had some things donated by some very generous donors, so those are even listed on there of what we needed and what we have.
Okay.
Jordan just had her birthday recently and did the online Facebook fundraiser.
That's right, I did see that.
So that has applied to this project. So we're about a little over $7,000 away from this about $11,000 or $12,000 project. But
that's amazing.
We're getting close.
Oh, I'm so happy you guys are getting the support you need.
Oh, it's been amazing. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without the support that we are getting.
Oh, yeah. So speaking of finances, I just had a couple questions. Yeah. We'll keep them vague. But do you have an idea of how much per animal it costs you I don't know, per month or something like that.
It's all different per animal because the potbellies are going to be a lot different than the cows.
Right.
And then vet bills come into play, you know. Sometimes an animal won't need any vet care, and then sometimes they'll need a $900 surgery with a $1,200 follow-up in 2 weeks. Yeah. It really depends, but day-to-day, our food bill is pushing a little bit over between $50 and $55.
That's okay.
And we keep it pretty low. We do as much as possible to keep that food bill down.
But
that's
even
kind of 50, where.
I mean, 50 times 30 days, that's 1,500.
Yep. Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's still a decent number, but yeah. That's about kind of where we're at just for food. And then vet bills are usually between $1,000 to $2,000 a month, depending on what happens.
What happens?
You know,
right.
some months it could be way less, and then in the next months it could be surprise. Yeah,
$10,000.
Yeah. No, none of those yet. I think our biggest one was probably a little bit over three.
That's still wow. Okay. And what items do you mostly need at the farm?
We have an Amazon wish list that if you go on Amazon, it has a lot of what we need. We have a lot of treat balls and kind of activities for the animals to keep them entertained during the day on there. We have some toys for the chickens. A lot of people have bought us stuff recently, which has been amazing. So our list is a little bit smaller. But there's always food bowls that we need. Obviously, food and Tractor Supply gift certificates and Home Depot gift certificates are always, because those are like...
Those are easy. You guys can pick what you need.
Yeah, the surprise items that we need are really good for those.
Okay. Good to know. And if people wanted to donate, where and how can they do so?
You can do some on multiple platforms. We have the GoFundMe link is in our Instagram bio right now. Our PayPal link, I believe, is in my Instagram, flip.flop.farmer. And then on our website, we have links to every single one of our paying platforms. So whatever one you have and it's most easy to use for you, that you can donate through. And those are all listed on our home screen of our website.
Yeah, I saw those on there. I was like, oh, this is perfect. You have like all the different ones on there. Okay, we have an upcoming event, Day at the Farm. So this event is going to be taking place on October 6th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. There's going to be drinks, food, and music. And it's also a free event.
It is.
Why are you making it free?
It's free to come. Anybody can come. We didn't want a family of four to have, you know, if you're even charging $5 or $10 a family of four,
up.
It can be a little bit as well as the drive. So you can come, spend the day with the animals, meet everybody. There is always, you know, merchandise. There's food to purchase and other ways that you can contribute. But if you just wanted to come, couldn't afford it, we wanted it to be inclusive for everybody. Because that's really, really one of our biggest things is try to include everybody, you know, vegans and pre-vegans to come out. And we thought making it free is the way to get the most people out there.
Yeah.
And we do make money other ways. So we don't always have to just focus on that to pay our bills. So if people just come and spend a free day and we send three vegans home, then I think we did our job and it was all worth it.
That's so cool. You guys have so much love and like compassion behind this movement that I think that's what's ultimately going to make you succeed, you know, even more than you already have, because it's like it's really easy to get caught up in something for a good reason, but then realize how you could financially benefit in different areas.
Oh,
and it's like you guys are doing a great job.
Oh, yeah, zero paid employees. Me and Jordan both still work full-time jobs. We have to drive to town every day to come to work.
Geez.
Yeah, it's a little over an hour each way.
Oh, my God. And coming here was, an hour and a half?
Under an hour and a half. There's a little bit of traffic in the morning, but it wasn't too bad. I'm getting used to it. I put on a Vegan Danielle podcast. It makes the whole drive a little bit easier. Yeah, the event was really fun last time. We're doing it biannually because the interest has been so amazing. We've held two so far. Last event drew over 420 people.
I saw that. That's amazing.
Yeah, way better. My goal is 500. I always try to up it. So my goal for this one is a little 500, but it's going to be so much fun. You get to come. You get to meet all of the animals. Every single animal has a volunteer with it that knows the complete story.
That's cool.
Yeah, so you can go up. Some of the animals will need to take a break, so we'll have a volunteer there to be like, hey, can you please give them their space? You can obviously still look at them and take pictures, but some of them will need breaks. But there's somebody with every single animal. You can go up, you can learn each one of their stories, all their quirks and personalities and little differences that they all have. See their family units and their emotions that they have. And so it's really fun. We have food there. We have, you know, Dash is coming. He's going to be DJing.
Dash, I'm.
Yeah, shout out.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really fun time. So, yeah, 11 to 3, Saturday, October 6th. So please invite your friends, invite your family. Anybody and everybody is welcome.
That's so amazing. And is your address listed on the website?
It's not listed. We'll put it on the Facebook event page if you go to our Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, if we don't. Working in rescues, you don't always want to put your address out
there. I know.
We kind of learned that through Tucker. Our last one that we had was a big surprise for us, which is we have kind of a huge update. We'll let you guys know before we're into this. But so it'll be on our Facebook. And then I think it's still on Google. You can probably find it. But if you message us, we can always send it to you directly.
And it's a Facebook. Is that a closed group or is that?
It'll be a Facebook event page. So we'll have the link and keep sharing it throughout the month of September. So you'll be able to click on it multiple times.
Perfect.
You'll see it listed a few places.
Yeah, I donate to another animal sanctuary not far, kind of far from here, north of here. And
Yes. Oh, cool.
Or no, like Elsinore.
Okay.
So they had a similar thing happen a long time ago. So now whenever they do events, they don't post their address, but they'll get an invite list and then they'll send everybody an email. And so it's like, okay, we'll try to keep it as protected as possible. And I can't imagine why anyone would ever want to do anything bad to something like this. But
ours was actually is more people will come and just drop animals off.
Oh.
Yeah, that happens to rescues.
That's
a
what
lot.
You were saying. Yeah, about
and
that's
that. Yeah,
right.
And that's what happened to us with Tucker, which was you know, what needed to happen, and it was a blessing, and he's amazing. But it is something that, as a rescue, like I said before, we have to set up all our animals responsibly, and having one dropped off at your gate isn't doing that to help anybody.
Oh, God.
And, then there are people that have a little bit of malicious things that they want to do, which are pretty much all my nightmares that I've been having nowadays. But in San Diego, at least they're a little bit more few and far between. People are a little bit more open-minded out here, so we haven't had any complaints. Even where we're at, it's very, very old school. There's a lot of farms, but everyone sees the level of care and how much we love our animals and has nothing but love for us and they're so far opposite of what our beliefs in, but they all still respect what we do, so we haven't even run into that.
That's
which has been really cool. But I think San Diego location definitely has something to do with that.
I definitely agree with that. I think for the most part, even the people that aren't vegan still have a certain respect for
absolutely,
the animals, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You can't hate on somebody who loves their animal that much.
Right. Mm-hmm. That just makes you look like the total jerk.
Exactly.
So. All right, guys. So we are almost done here. And thank you so much for being here today and sharing
your
story.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. But before you leave, I have a last segment. And we are recording inside a Specialty Produce, which is San Diego's largest produce distributor. And I like to ask my guests what their favorite fruit or veggie is. Jordan actually picked a couple. So I actually have all of them sitting up here. I was trying to think which one we were going to go with. And I picked Asian pears just because they're kind of blowing up right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People are really, really enjoying them.
Yeah.
I specifically like them because I love the taste of a pear, but I'm a big texture person. And sometimes they can get a little bit grainy,
milly,
and so it has the texture of an apple but the taste of a pear,
and they actually kind of look like apples.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I just heard somebody walking by saying they have the best Asian pears here, and I'm like, yes, I'm so happy
good.
We picked these. So I have a little segment that I'd like to share that's from our free specially produced app. So there are thousands of different known varieties of Asian pears, each varying slightly in shape and color. All Asian pears today are relatives of the Yusuri pear and the Japanese sand pear. The Asian pear is known by many names, including nashi, Japanese pear, sand pear, and Chinese pear. Although they're not related to apples, Asian pears are often referred to as apple pears because of their crisp, juicy, apple-like consistency. So we had already mentioned the GoFundMe page, your website.
Let me just do a little Tucker update for
you
guys.
Let's do that.
So it might be already out by the time this podcast released, but we haven't put it out yet. So Tucker was an animal that was dropped off at our gate. They basically had him to us in a box and said this goat got thrown out of a car. We took him to the vet the next day, did all the workup, all the x-rays. He was not thrown from a car. He didn't have any of the injuries.
Oh, thank God.
We don't actually know what was wrong, but he couldn't stand. He couldn't get up. He couldn't support himself.
Oh.
And this was in May. And so through our physical therapy and our wheelchair training and all that, he's been walking lately and been up and and walking around, although he needed help because if he falls, he couldn't get back up. And 2 days ago, he started standing.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, he stood up multiple times, and he's done it multiple times since from a sitting position. And that is a huge accomplishment. This is the final hurdle for him to start acting like a real goat and being a little bit more independent.
Yay.
So I just want to give your
thank you.
Listeners a little behind the scenes on our progress that we've been making with him.
I was just thinking, Tucker was the one, he had like in a little wheelchair thing?
You might have been thinking of Chance. He was our first special needs goat that we had that passed away. He actually passed away in the beginning of May, and Tucker showed up to our gate 10 days later. So we were able to use all of the knowledge and all of the tools that we had for Chance on Tucker. So we were able to get his physical therapy program started right away. One of the biggest things we run into is what we do is so unique. There's not cases out there of animals that have gone through this or facts or experiences. So we are just kind of, you know,
doing
our best, contacting the other rescues. You know, we go to dog physical therapy and apply it to a goat. So Chance gave us a lot of experience and really connected us to the right people that we were able to apply for Tucker.
Everything happens for a reason.
Absolutely.
That's great that there was something really positive that came out of that, other than just housing him and loving him.
Yeah.
And
absolutely. But... yeah. Chance was amazing. He did so much on this earth, and we were so happy that he was in our life.
That's so great. I love what you guys are doing. I hope only for the best, of
Thank
course.
You.
Yes. And so we had mentioned the GoFundMe page. Your guys' website is farmanimalrefuge.org. Instagram and Facebook, you are Farm Animal Refuge.
Yeah, at Farm Animal Refuge. Our Facebook and our Instagram are really just your daily dose of cute animal pictures
yes,
and
they
videos.
Are.
We try not to get too aggressive or anything on there. That's not the platform that we use. You can check out our personal page for our more intimate feelings about our posts. But our Instagram is just for fun. It's just so people can see the animals and hear their updates. So follow it just to make your day feel good.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. This was really, really fun.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode. For more things Vegan Danielle, visit me on Instagram at @vegan_Danielle or on my website at www.vegandanielle.com.
The Specialty Produce app is the world's number one handheld resource on produce. The app features photographs, recipes, geography and history, taste and culinary applications on over 1,900 produce items. From apples to zapote, we've got your produce questions answered. Our app is available for both iPhone and Android. Download our app for free today.